Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
One size fits all seems like a good idea for clothes until you try them on. Same goes for healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hello, everyone. It is the Final Word Show. Liverpool beat Bournemouth by 2-1 in the Premier League. Hi, Steve. Welcome.
Hi, Paul. Thanks for having me.
George Stevens here as well. Hi, Georgia.
Hello.
Jack Gill as well. Yes, amazing.
That was like Family Fortunes.
Yeah, that's all that.
We are brought to you in association with The Athletic today. We've got a fantastic 50% off offer and a 7-day free trial thrown in there as well. Some of the best writing on the face of planet Earth right now being done by the likes of our very own Super James Pearce. Not being Bad News Pearce, he just gets to write really good things instead of breaking people's hearts and dreams by talking about transfers all the time. He's been let loose. Sy Hughes is on there, and the best thing about it right now is you get to keep up to date with all the things happening around the Premier League as well. So, you know, they were the first to break some of the biggest news stories that have happened in the world of football, obviously around Manchester City, etc., etc. So you can get on there. Brilliant, right? And as I say, you can get 50% off the code, and the link will be in the description underneath both the video and the podcast version of this. So get involved. Stay a brilliant game, exciting, dramatic, edgy seat stuff. I put Liverpool back in the driving seat. The Manchester derby was great, wasn't it?
Yeah, I was going to say. I knew there was a punchline. I hadn't figured that out in my head. That helped. I actually thought the Bournemouth game, I thought it was all right at first. The ground was rocking. It was a fast-paced game. I think it became in the second half a bit of kind of what where Liverpool have been for a while, and not at their best, you know, in terms of attacking. Because even in months gone by, even if we had that one in, we probably would have scored four. We'd have blew them away second half, but we never quite got that. You know, whether it's a lack of confidence or just something missing. Bobby Firmino just can't buy a goal at Anfield. All that kind of stuff. It made it more nervy than it probably needed to be, on the balance of play. But I mean, I went with my lad for the first time. Absolutely loved it. Both of us. It was a great experience. The fact that we won obviously makes it a lot better as well. But all in all, I thought Liverpool were all right. It was an improvement on recent weeks, but it probably isn't where they were post break. If that makes sense.
Yeah, it was an odd one, wasn't it, George? It was not a. Me and Chris did a post match stuff, and it was all a bit. Everyone's general attitude was a bit like. Well, that's done, and that's why I referenced the Manchester derby. We'll do a bit on that a bit later on, actually, because I think it's actually in some regards more interesting than our game because of the impact it kind of has on the season and what have you. But it wasn't a brilliant game. There was just about enough in there that Liverpool deserved to win. But equally, there's a couple of dodgy moments in there. In fact, the first goals. Where do you sit on it? Because I think Klopp was adamant that it was a foul. I think we all in the ground felt it was a foul on Gomez. Most people watching it would say it was a foul on Gomez. Was it a foul on Gomez?
I think it was pretty obvious because it wasn't, a shoulder to shoulder. It wasn't sort of a coming together. It was a pretty clear and obvious push on him. But then I still don't think that excuses Gomez's defending. Yeah. I think he reacts and he spends far too long reacting to a push and looking for that foul. And maybe it's because we've got VAR.
I think everyone stops.
Yeah, I think it's because we've got VAR now and things like that. People think that everything's going to stop for a minute and then it's going to... So he was a little too reliant on that, and I think he gave him just far too much space. And I think him dropping back then... It knocks everyone else out of line. It allows them to push forward. It allows them to, eventually be onside. I think his reaction kind of just creates a bit of a domino effect for
goal. It was a bizarre passage of play, Jack, because obviously we're kind of getting hit on the counter. Milner's up the other end of the pitch and everyone's struggling to kind of get back in. And my attitude was, that'll get disallowed. It just will. And I wonder whether that was the mentality of the players, because, look, eventually they get back in line and the play just carries on, but it all just, like, it felt like Bournemouth were going, oh, go on, we'll just stick this in the back of the net and let them decide. And ultimately, they did the right thing.
Yeah, I mean, I think it was a blatant foul. I think, you
if
know,
if Gomez falls over, I think it takes a tumble. I think there's no doubt. Maybe he should.
My mate said to me, he said, if that was Van Dijk that had been pushed in the back, then we would have got the foul, 100%. And I think for me, the biggest selling point in how you know it's a foul is when that referee on BT Sport, whose job is to solely lick the arses of Premier League referees, he even said that it should have been a foul. So I think for me, I'm not sure how the referees missed it. I'm not sure why VAR decided not to overrule it. But I think, again, it's testament that, you know, we've been down the last couple of weeks after the recent results and yet again we bounced back after going 1-0 down.
I thought Bournemouth were more niggly than Bournemouth ever have been.
Yeah.
Mm. Bournemouth are usually very, very nice, but they weren't. They were, Callum Wilson especially was on throwing his body away. You know, he had the ball and he'd throw it away. Just, you know, he went to give it to Firmino and then rolled it past him. You know, just like little niggly bits of gamesmanship. And from where I was at, they were running towards me, and Tim, as yourself, in the cop. It just looked like he'd been fouled. And I put on Twitter, like, was that a foul? Because it looks like a foul. But then, that's the thing, is that when you don't get it, because you know that there's, again, time's gone by, years, like last year, or whatever, you would just kind of...
The old days.
You'd have to carry on, but I agree, there was hesitancy, because I think it was that clear that they thought, well, even if that guy's missed it, because you know he's from where he is and stuff, the video ref is gonna just overrule that, because you could see the guy's arm come out.
It's not the first time though, is it? Because it happened against United as well, at Old Trafford, exactly the same circumstance when United got the goal there as well. I just think it's one of them where he just seems to not want to give it.
Well, that's the weird situation you're left in. I haven't got the energy to go back into VAR.
Oh, no, be honest.
But the referee. It makes you wonder whether the referee has seen it and thought, I'll just let this go and let the VAR sort it out.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But it's another one of those situations when you're right, we've seen them countless times this season when he lets it go, then the VAR go, well, the referee's let it go. Is it clear enough for us to pull it back? And because it's not massive, is it? It should be recoverable. Because it's still the ball still gets moved on like three times after that incident. Liverpool should still be able to switch on and what have you. But I did think it was a bit dodgy. I'm glad it didn't matter.
Yeah, but he was also, if you go back to the, again, not just that incident, but the incident, there was a lot of times where they were in right down the middle of our pitch.
Yeah,
just like it was so open that, you know, obviously we'll speak Milner later, the clearance. That's just another a ball straight down the middle. And Watford did it well, and Degsy Lovren got slaughtered, and right, so he didn't play well. But it's happened in the game since that, you know, it wasn't brilliant there. It was pretty average. And Gomez, again, talk about Lovren getting bullied by Deeney. Wilson was having his way with, again, and I know he fouled him in that one, but there was instances where he just looked a bit too much for him at times. And Callum Wilson isn't like amazing. I mean, he's a half decent Premier League player.
I think he was really good, actually.
He did play well, he had a good game, but I'm just saying, like, it's not like we're getting torn apart by Sergio Aguero, you know, like a world class player. But these are like two run-of-the-mill Premier League decent strikers who have kind of bullied Liverpool a little bit.
Yeah.
And we were never in that instance for a while. It's kind of creeped back in recently. Again, I think a lot of it's to do with what's in front of the centre-half as well. I imagine we'll talk about that. But it just looked like, again, going back to the beginning of the season, it was too easy to get in against Liverpool. And it didn't matter as much then, because we were scoring threes and twos and threes and fours and whatever. It just seems like now it's a bit of a harder slog to get those goals, which makes it more apparent. You know, Bournemouth could easily have scored three.
Mm.
Like, genuinely, you know, Ake should score his header. The Fraser one is what it is. They had chances to score against Liverpool, and that's a concern, isn't it, going forward?
One of the big concerns, George, in a really roundabout way, is Firmino. Because I don't think Liverpool will be concerned by Firmino, because all of his underlying stats still read very, very well. He's still doing all the right things, you know, in terms of his XG, he's still bang up there. He should be scoring goals, but he's not scoring goals. Mm. And there comes a point where that is going to be a problem, and that kind of links into what Steve's saying there. When you're not putting things away, that is a concern ultimately.
Yeah, and I think as well, I think it's highlighted by the fact that, like Steve said, that we're not bagging goals everywhere else. I think, you know, I always remember the Firmino, and my, like, idea is when he played against Newcastle and he's setting, you know, Mo Salah up with all these flicks, and he's kind of just looks like he's playing on a park with like a bunch of kids. And I think that kind of edge is slightly gone, and whether that's his own confidence and he's thinking about, you know, this goal at Anfield and things like that. Like, it must creep in, the fact that everybody's talking about it, and yeah. and you know, it's something that he must want so desperately to just do. But I think it's the fact that he's not looking as sort of, he always looks like a bit sharp and kind of like, he does like the magic things that nobody else kind of does, and he's not doing that as
it's
well.
It's that final, it's just the final thing, isn't it? You know, he misses an absolute sitter. He has that one where he flicks it over the defender, right at the dead ball line, and just smacks it across the face of goal, which is neither here nor there. And that's the thing, Jack, is that I wonder whether he's just entering into that world now where it's playing on his mind. And it can't not be playing on his mind. It's like a year since he scored at Anfield.
I said the other day, his first goal at Anfield this season is coming on Wednesday. It's just going to happen. It's just going to happen. It's one of them things with Bobby where, as well, I'd get him in your football index, because once he gets his one, they're not going to stop. It wouldn't surprise me if he bags a hat-trick on Wednesday. And
I'm not that confident in him at the minute. I mean, history suggests he'd be fine, but right now, for the next few weeks, he looks short. He looks short of half a yard, even. And he's never blistered any quick, but he just looks like... The Newcastle game is perfect when it's just in and it's gone. Mm-hmm. Everything's just, it looks half a second slower, and he's already quite slow anyway. So it's shown even more than that. I mean, and the goal, you know, the miss. It's not the miss can happen. Mo Salah's missed absolute sitters this season. It doesn't really affect him. But when I saw in the ground his body language after he missed it, it was like, you know, it was like, oh, I can't believe that again. That was it. And it does, I agree, it looks like it's on his head a little bit.
It's reminded me a little bit of the Genie Wijnaldum thing where he couldn't score away from home. And then he scores in the Olympico on the run to the Champions League final. And all of a sudden it doesn't kind of matter, because as long as he's doing, this is one of the situations there, if you do, as long as you're doing all the right stuff, you've got to trust that it'll come. He scored enough goals in his life. What I think's funny is that, because there's always got to be a player that's the scapegoat or whatever. I don't think Liverpool fans are particularly scapegoating him, but I'm seeing other fans talking about him. I've seen Arsenal fans who are desperate to slaughter him, and they're trying to compare it to, you're comparing him to Dennis Bergkamp and all this kind of stuff. And it's not like Bergkamp scored tons of goals. It provided everyone else is scoring. And we're talking about it once again, another 20 goal season for Mohamed Salah, who had, let's move on to Steve. He 70 goals in 100 games now for Liverpool is, I mean, there's no getting away from it. That's elite. That's as elite as it comes.
Yeah, it's absurd. It's just ridiculous numbers from a ridiculous player. And, you know, Sadio Mane did no favours with that one.
One of the worst cutbacks.
Honestly, it was absolutely awful. And it was like, what are you doing? And then somehow he sneaks in that bottom corner. And yeah, it Salah still frustrates a lot of people, I think, in terms of output and stuff. And it's like, I get it, because he could actually get more, because he does miss a few. You know, he is a bit greedy at times, but you know what, the numbers that it's absurd numbers. And like you say, it's worth carrying someone if you have to accept the fact that he's going to be a little bit greedy now and then.
Yeah.
And whatever, sad. He's got 70 goals in 100 games. Like, and
I think it's only Alan Shearer who's got more.
In fact, yeah.
He's got 79, I think.
Just to contextualise, yeah, in terms of a first 100 games for a club in the Premier League, the only player who's got more is Shearer, who scored 79, which is just unreal.
Torres is on there as well.
Liverpool, in terms of Liverpool, Torres 63 and Suarez and Fowler 62,
and they're number nines.
Yeah,
all three of them are number
absolute centre forward number nines. Fowler took penalties, Suarez took free kicks and pens as well, I think.
More free kicks,
obviously Gerrard was there, wasn't he? But yeah, that's, I mean, again, this is what keeps getting brought back to. He plays wide. I know he has played centre forward in his time, but it's mad, isn't it? Because I don't know whether I'm right in saying this, because he's adored all over the place or whatever. But and maybe it's a generational thing, because I don't have the same affinity with footballers that I did when I was in my teens and 20s, because you just don't. When you're significantly older than most of them, it's hard to have that level of
love. Jealous of the money.
No, yeah, that too. Like, it doesn't feel like Salah has the levels of love of any of those players that I've kind of...
No. At the minute, if you're doing odds on whose song gets sung first, the Liverpool game, I mean, the odds on, it's Bobby Firmino.
Yeah.
The first song that you sing or to play is Bobby Firmino's song. And then it takes a while sometimes for Salah to get his song. You know what I mean? It is. I think what it is, mate, is that he doesn't do the extravagant a lot. Yeah. Like, he doesn't do the mad flick stuff for me, you know, doesn't he? He doesn't run past seven like Mane does, and he's not, you know, he's not Virgil van Dijk where he's just bullying people. He's kind of just like, he's a bit like a machine footballer.
Yeah.
He's just so efficient and like so dangerous, but like, it's ridiculous. He's got 70 goals in 100 games. It's bizarre. He's the main reason why Liverpool, or one of the main reasons why Liverpool have gone 97 points and they're on course to do it again and go even more potentially. I actually thought it was one of his better games. I actually thought all round, I thought he played well.
Yeah. I think it's one of them as well where the first season doesn't help, because he was so, so good that first season. He was bang on. The amount of goals and assists he got that year was unbelievable. And I think now people say they don't, but it's so hard not to compare him now to that first season.
Well, because everyone was going, it was messy levels. You know, 43 goals, 14 assists and 50 appearances in 17-18 is superhuman. I mean, but then by comparison, you're right. Bear in mind, prior to him coming along, and obviously a little bit of Mane involved in this as well, like Coutinho was finishing our top goal scorer on like 11, 12 goals a season. And now we've got a lad who plays on the wing, who scores more goals than some of the greatest centre forwards ever to grace the game.
Mm.
You know, more goals in that spell, like than in 100 games than like Ruud van Nistelrooy.
I think as well, it's the same with Firmino now. I think you've got to take into account what's behind them as well, or who they're playing alongside. So I think like you talk about Firmino, like Firmino's like dipping form. You got to look at like the midfield constantly changing behind them. And also, like we said, that's kind of been our problem area for a bit, especially with Hendo being out and Milner just coming back in. And the same goes for Salah. You look at kind of that side as well. You've got Trent, who never really changes, but with Gomez being out for a long period of time, that side was always the side that was shifting and changing. Yeah. So I think the fact that he's even, we talk about him hitting the same foot, and the fact he's consistent at the end of the day. If you're talking about a winger getting 20 goals every season, like
I think his goal at the weekend sums him up. Just that finish, I think it is such a hard finish, but he makes it look so easy.
Yeah.
And that's what Salah does time and time again. He makes finishes like that look absolutely easy, and he definitely deserves a lot more
people think. I don't think many people think he's our best player.
No.
I don't think they do. But what he's brilliant at, and he doesn't, is what the others can't do, and even Firmino to an extent can't do this. He holds the ball up, and I know that's it's really old school Sunday league times, but at times Liverpool just need to get out.
Yeah.
And it's give it to Salah, and he'll just stand there. All
he's ridiculous strength on the ball.
Yeah. And he's done it again.
He was bullying Bournemouth.
Yeah,
like the amount of times either with him holding it up, or he was in a 50-50 and he's chasing down. Because I wonder whether he's lost, maybe not even half a yard of pace, but he's lost the step, I think. You know, maybe it's just overall fitness and fatigue and cumulative injuries or whatever. But he's gained that in strength. Mm. So, whereas two seasons ago, he was making it every single time. If on the odd instance where he doesn't make it now, he'll go shoulder to shoulder with you, and he'll come out with the ball. Mm. And he was against Bournemouth. He was maintaining possession in a number of ways. And again, you're right, Steve, it's not sexy. It's not the kind of thing that you put on match of the day highlight reels. But it was essential to Liverpool coming out with the victory.
Yeah, I thought he was really, really good. Actually, I thought he, you know, I know Milner got man of the match and he played well. I thought Salah might have got it. I thought he was really, really good. And he looked like, I don't know, a little bit like getting the bit between your teeth. It looked like he realised, like, you know, something needs to happen. Like, that pass is shite by Mane. It's awful.
Yeah.
It's horrendous. And he turns it with one touch and one finish, and all of a sudden you can kind of forget about it.
Yeah.
Because if that pass is that bad and Salah can't make something magic out of it, it's another, oh, well, there was a big chance Liverpool missed. And you sometimes get those in those games when you're one down and you look like not everything's working and you blow an absolute shocker, which it would have been. It can deflate everyone.
Well, it was very typical of like the sort of form that the front three's been in, I think, for the last few weeks, George. That Mane winning the ball back, doing brilliantly, and then it's that final ball, and that's the thing I think it's been lacking between the front three, is their interplay, I think, has probably been as bad as it's been for a while. That it doesn't feel cohesive, it doesn't feel effortless.
Yeah.
And we're just so lucky that both of them, ultimately in front of goal, are so good.
I think that's the thing. Individually, the front three are all brilliant. And I think Salah and Mane, definitely, if you were to, everyone else in the team's playing crap, them two will still, if they have a good game, they're willing to, you know, drag a game by the scruff of the neck and win it. I think sometimes that's what Firmino lacks, is if if the team's necessarily not playing well, but he's having a good game, I still don't see him sometimes being the one to...
Him taking the game by the scruff of the neck for him is being more of him. It's being a bit deeper.
Yeah.
It's probably trying to influence
the
play.
He needs someone else to be on it as well, because I always think of him as a creator rather than a finisher, and he usually gets the kind of tap-ins, if you like, or the worldy goal.
Yeah.
I was just going to say that I used to think that as well, but then obviously this season he's had his moments as well. Like, you look at the Club World Cup, there were times then where you wondered, when's it going to come? And Firmino was the man to step up. And I just think it's a bad patch. I think you think, obviously, I know it's the same for Salah and Mane, but they obviously played a lot of football. He went to final, they won the Copa America in the summer. He's played all this season. You think last season he got rotated out a lot more for Origi. Mm. And I think obviously he's had that break. He's given him time off. He's probably been on the lagers again. Mm. And now he's back at it. And I think it's just that. I think it wouldn't surprise me if he plays Wednesday, but then he's rested in the derby. It wouldn't surprise me.
As you say, in terms of Firmino, I don't think there's ultimately anything wrong with his all-round play. He just needs to stick the ball in the back of the net a bit more, and that's the thing about him. I just don't think goal scoring is as natural to him as it is to someone like Mo Salah or Sadio Mane. They're the more clinical guys.
I was thinking, like, his confidence on the ball isn't lacking. It's just in front of goal. Like, there were times in that game where he was coming deep into our half. We'd have a throw-in right in our half, and it'd be him. They'd give it to get us out. Yeah. And that's your centre-forward. That doesn't really happen. You know, Sergio Aguero isn't dropping between the centre-halves to get... You know, so that's the Bobby Firmino. It's the rough and the smooth. I think on the ball, he doesn't look like his confidence, but around the box, he does.
Yeah.
It all looks a little bit hesitant.
Yeah. And just lastly on the Salah thing, though, I mean, at the minute, 20 goals and 8 assists for Salah. He will go down as one of the greatest players ever to play for Liverpool. Make no doubt about it. I think, you know, but I find the whole thing funny, isn't it? And maybe it's just because we're spoiled for choice for favourites. Is that you've got no... I think in the days when we had Torres, okay, you might have really liked Jamie Carragher and you might have liked Sammy Hippier or whatever, but it was Gerrard or Torres, wasn't it? They were your choices. You know, you had Fowler back in the day, maybe McManaman or whatever, or you had Owen, and then you had Gerrard and a couple of others. Whereas now, like, people love Andy Robertson as much as they've loved any centre forward to play for us. And wonder whether Salah just falls a little bit far of that. Maybe it's the global status thing that doesn't vibe with us. But for whatever reason, make no doubt about it, Mo Salah is world class.
I think as well, it was like when people were kind of, especially like here, kind of trying to get across how good Jordan Henderson was, and nobody was buying it. And it's like, no, just because he doesn't do, you know, diagonals every two games, he is the most consistent and efficient player.
Yeah.
And now the fact that we don't have him, and people are finally saying, oh, you see, you miss Jordan Henderson. It's the exact same with Mo Salah. Is he works, he's efficient, he does the easy things and the hard things without breaking a sweat.
That ball and he plays for Milner, when Milner's completely in, his left back, he's basically on the corner of the 6-yard box and he totally fluffs his lines. But that pass from Salah's absolutely out of this world, and it's mad because I criticised him for being a bit more, you know, he was always the end to a move. It had to all lead up to Mo Salah. But again, look, 8 assists so far this season. He got 10 the season before, 14 the season before that. Like, and he's also putting down elite level centre forward goals. Nobody says Harry Kane needs to set up more people.
Yeah.
You know, and we love, and everyone unequivocally loves Sadio Mane. He doesn't put down those level of assist numbers either.
I think as well with the Torres thing and kind of people not, I think during then as well, we never necessarily, bar maybe Rafa, we never really had a manager that everybody agrees on and loved. And I don't think we kind of had like a starting 11 that everybody loved. It, like, there would always be one or two, or sometimes like 5 names that you'd be like, why are they playing for us?
Just before I get slaughtered by everyone, Mane's got 8 assists this season. Before inevitably the comments bring that up. But last season I only got 2 assists, so there you go.
That's the thing, is that Salah is producing numbers that...
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Take away Messi and Ronaldo because they are just like freaks.
Not human.
Just freak numbers. Like, it's up there with the best of anyone. He scores goals and he makes assists as well as any Liverpool player in history, really, doesn't
he? Well, people are absolutely jizzing in their pants about Grealish and Maddison and Cantwell. And these are lads who are, like, meant to be creators. And Salah's got, I haven't seen them since this weekend, the updated stats. I don't know whether any of them added assists this weekend, but I think he's got none of them's got more assists, I don't think, than Mo Salah's got this season. And you can argue different teams and all that kind of stuff. Like, but again, their jobs are creators. They are designed, they are there to put the ball to the people who score the goals. And this is a lad who also does that as well.
I think as well, when you look at the sides, it's obviously everyone's playing the same sides type thing, but teams set up different against Liverpool. I don't see a lot of teams putting 10 players behind the ball against Villa, against, you know,
you don't pop the bus against Bournemouth, do you?
Like, exactly. You know? So to be able to create and find gaps within that space, like, imagine if he was, you know, in some of the other teams.
I think another thing is that the players you just mentioned are English. So they're hyped up a lot more than obviously Mo Salah's going to be.
Yeah, it's true. Fine, let him not be hyped up. It's fine by Maisie Flex. Yet another golden boot and add another major honour to his trophy cabinet. Fair play him. Our second goal, Virgil van Dijk's brilliant. Mane, brilliant finish. You know, we've kind of talked around it, but that goal, that was a centre-forward finish.
Yeah, it was.
You know, that whole, like, Thierry Henry would do that for fun. Torres would do that for fun. Just stride onto it, open your body, slot it. Makes it look effortless. Apologies to Chris because I put the picture out of him. He's in the background of the Mane celebration and did like a fat spot the page. What pick out a page after did you go with George? Yeah, perfect. And it's the one moment where he's not celebrating. Chris's face is like, ooh, he was a very excited man for that.
That goal was one of those goals where you know it's a goal 5 seconds before it's a goal.
Yeah.
Like the second Van Dijk gets on the end of that. He intercepts that ball. You're like, well, we've just scored.
Yeah.
I was standing with my son, and the second Van Dijk gets it, everyone goes, oh, and
pointing him towards the action.
You're gonna see Mane score because you just knew he was always, and that hasn't always been the case with him.
Yeah,
there's been times in the past where I would never have wanted him there, but it was everyone was celebrating before.
I'm not gonna lie, when I saw the pass that he made to Salah, and I saw him squaring it the very first time I watched it, I thought, why are you squaring a ball there? Then I kind of thought, you know, left foot, and when you looked at the space in front of Salah, if that ball would have been right, then you think he had no brainer for square. But there was that doubt in my mind from the start, why has he done that? I thought, is he off it? Is he not? And then he just slotted down. I thought, oh, who am I to worry?
He's something else. Jack Steve mentioned him briefly before, and you know, he's come up a couple of times, and he should do. I want to talk about James Milner. I think Matt, look, he takes the man of the match. He was my man of the match, I thought, and not necessarily because he was perfect, but
he embodied a lot of the stuff that I think we've probably been lacking for the last few games. You know, when you've not got Henderson on the pitch, when you've not got him on the pitch, people can, I think people do this all the time. They see Van Dijk and they go, well, he should be Liverpool captain because he's boss. And it's like, Virgil van Dijk, I wouldn't want Virgil van Dijk as captain because he's just too laid back. And you need, no, but you'd sue, but he's a lead by example kind of footballer because he's so good, and you don't want to slack below standards because you want Virgil van Dijk to like you because he's so good. But he's not the kind of guy who's going to go and just put someone into the stands to change the course of a game. That's just not how he plays. I mean, for God's sake, look at the Champions League game away at Man City, and Sterling absolutely has him off when, like, if that was a James Milner Henderson mentality, they'd have picked Sterling up above their heads and thrown him 10 rows back. James Milner was just wonderful. There's just something so lovable about a fella who goes and puts that kind of effort in.
Yeah, I think he's, for me, he's the best Bosman transfer in the history of the Premier League. I think... The thing is, he's not like a Calvin Klein model sort of player, but he's James Milner, do you know what I mean? Like, he will do everything perfectly. He will give his... BT Sport picked up before the game, obviously him doing that talk. You've probably seen it, the talk to the players and whatever. And for me, I think, obviously, with professionals, that's probably expected. You expect that sort of thing. But I think it just shows with James Milner what he brings to this side. And obviously, it's the same with Jordan Henderson. You need players like that. You need experienced players who will give them their all on the pitch. And it's like I say, he does absolutely everything perfectly. And it'll just give everything to the game and for Liverpool.
This is just one of those situations, isn't it, Jojo, where I think it elevates everything. There's a reason why, I was thinking about this watching the Manchester derby, why all the Manx love Wan-Bissaka. And it's why people immediately took to Fabinho, because, like, Slardy's a boss, aren't they? Mm. You know what I mean? You don't really need them, but a good, old-fashioned, putting your body on the
ball,
line.
Win the ball, win the player.
Win the ball, take the man, all that kind of stuff. And Milner's got that for him. But, you know, he's come back in. He's not played a lot of footy since the turn of the year because of injury. He's just come back in. He's playing left back again, which we don't even bat an eyelid at anymore. Mm. James Milner was a winger who wants to play centre mid, and we play him at left back, and he's boss. And he also, you know, he's putting thunder and tackles in, and look, ultimately that clearance as well. Mm. Unreal.
Well, I think as well for the brief sort of dip that we've had. Everybody was saying, you know, it's because we haven't got Henderson. Henderson's not there. And I sort of tried to make the point, but Milner wasn't there as well. And you need one or the other in them cases. And it's not because they do, you know, the Firmino stuff, or they do these, or even that they're like, you know, creating chat. It's just that they work hard and they're also sort of wrangling a team together and keeping them on track. He is a captain, like, in every sense of the word. Yeah. And I think that's the thing that people are seeing, and obviously BT picked it up beforehand and things like that, is over the past few games, there's been a bit of complacency and it's been dropping. And I don't think it's any coincidence that them two players haven't been on the pitch to keep that together.
I think against Watford, one of the things for me that we were missing was that sort of person that could go, like, obviously when we went 1-0 down, 2-0 down, I think the players sort of went, oh, well, what do we do now?
Yeah.
And that's the sort of thing that Henderson and Milner would be like, you know what, book your ideas up, sort yourselves out. They'd be screaming at them. Yeah. And that's the thing. I think, obviously, Van Dijk's an excellent player, and in the past we've had no issues with him being captain. But I think in that game, we showed why you need a Henderson, you need a Milner.
Well, we've seen it through the years. I feel like sometimes I go a little bit hard on Gerrard's captaincy. And I don't mean it because he was a great captain for Liverpool. Undoubtedly, it doesn't need me to say that. But I think about games at, like, there was a game at Old Trafford when Mascherano got sent off, Steve, and Gerrard should have been between Mascherano and the referee, and he wasn't, because that was just not in his character. He's, you know, he's a bit more withdrawn than that. Whereas Milner, Henderson are those guys. Mm. They're the guys who put themselves in harm's way. They put themselves between the action, you know, the barriers when they need to be. And that's the thing that's lacking in teams sometimes. There's no criticism of Virgil van Dijk. But that, going back to the Watford game, one of our players gets booted. James Milner just goes and boots them back. Mm. And then the rest of the team go, oh, this is fine. Because even if I take a kick, I know that they're going to get a kick back. You don't need Trent Alexander-Arnold going on vendettas. he needs to be left alone to do what he does well, and players like Milner afford you to be able to do that.
Yeah, won the last game, didn't he, when he just takes him out on the halfway line, thought, I'm not chasing him back, I'll follow you. He was actually in the refs here a lot this game, wasn't he, as well? After the Gomez incident, I think it was a few minutes later, the ref stopped the game, didn't he, have a word with Milner and stuff. It is important, I think Klopp referenced the Watford, he said, you know, I've lost both my talkers. So if he's mentioning it, it must be a thing, you know, it's not nothing. Like I say, it's not the be all and end all, and if you play well, you'll win. You know, Liverpool will beat Watford 9 times out of 10 if they play well. They didn't, but sometimes you might need that little something extra. Performance-wise, I thought he did well. You know, I don't think he was faultless.
Anyone was brilliant, really, on the day, ultimately. No, there were a lot of, like, 8s and 9s in that
And we definitely missed Robertson at times where we're on the break and he just doesn't have the legs anymore.
Well, it's not that... It's the...
Manny's looking for him going...
He was the most right-footed left back I've ever seen. Like, I don't think is there one moment in the game when he tries to go outside.
No, it's all right. Can you? No, I'll cut in. Honest.
Right, lads. What I'm going to do now is you're going to cut inside. I am. Yeah, great. Right. Are you ready for me?
Yeah, no. And the sides when we're on the counter and Sadio was looking, going overlap.
Here he comes. Oh, fine, it's fine. It shouldn't be underestimated, the technique and behind that clearance.
Yeah, it's ridiculous.
Like, there's just a lot of footballers. I was watching Harry Maguire play for Manchester United.
He's a donkey, isn't he?
He is a donkey. He's a massive donkey. And he just bundles that over the line. He just throws himself into that and it goes in. Could you watch it? And I've watched it back almost as many times as I've watched Trent's corner. It's Barcelona at this point. Like, he the ball comes over and he just watches it the whole way. And, I mean, Georgia, at any point during that arc, you could bottle it and take a swing for it, but he waits for a man who screwed up his volley so badly, you know, in the first half, to wait for that moment to strike the ball was just absolutely out of this world.
Yeah, like you said, I think you see it time and time again of the kind of behind the goal shot of a defender running and it's like, oh, you're gonna click, and then they end up in the net, the ball with them and like tangled up, and it's like, oh, can't really do anything about that. And I think you see Milner running back, but I don't think there's any doubt in anyone's that's what's going to happen. It's like, yeah, James Milner's going to clear that somehow.
Yeah.
But the way he does it is just like...
He takes one extra stride, and I think most of us just go for it and try to get anything on it. And he takes that just one more pace, and it allows him to get the contact on the ball that he gets on it.
It's one of them things as well. It's as good as a goal the other end. And he's 34. He's 34 and he's able to do something.
Can we stop saying that?
I saw
that? Like,
Chris's tweet. Like, he's not dead.
That, he genuinely not that old.
Yeah, but in the Premier League.
You say that, but I'm 30 and I wake up and I think, if I'd have done that, I wouldn't be here now. I'd still be on the pitch. Someone carry me on. Like, get true. The stretch out.
I think as well, though, like you're saying, it's as good as a goal, but you saw the reaction from the crowd as well. People were up and genuinely celebrating that as much as a goal. And in a game where the atmosphere is getting questioned so much, it was needed.
There's moments in seasons, and I think every one of those lads, or there's very few now, increasingly few members of that squad, who at the end of the season, when they're lifting the trophy, when they're getting their time, their moment with it, that won't feel like they've earned it. And James Milner will have a handful of moments. This is pure recency bias speaking, of course, but that'll be one that everyone can, you know, you can have this like end of a movie where you bring up the character's name and what they did next. But this is like, here's the moment. You show that clip of James Milner lifts the trophy and you show that clip of him clearing off the line and going, there's 3 points to James Milner won.
For the kind of typical in my head of like end of season montage type thing, you've got like early season of Firmino doing the flicks and the tricks, and then you've got obviously Origi and the, but that is sort of just as important because you look at the dip and the things like that, and everybody, you know, you talk about the media, you talk about fans, oh, Liverpool haven't got this, Liverpool haven't, they've bottled it, like they've done, and you see the way that he's just done that so calmly and the reaction to that, that's something that kickstarts, you know, a comeback as such. But with the game coming on Wednesday as well, it's so, so important.
Yeah, 100%. I didn't mention it, Jack, but Jürgen Klopp screaming in the face of the court official when we scored.
I love it.
It's just... absolutely unreal. Ellie apologised, didn't he? He said, like, another one. I love Jürgen's apologies of like, I did it. I wouldn't choose to do it. I wouldn't choose to do it again. I'm sorry that I got him over the top, but he was like, wah! It was fucking brilliant.
It's all the opposition fans as well, like, oh, Ancelotti got banned for saying something to the referee, and then yeah. Klopp's like, it's brilliant. It just epitomises Klopp again, doesn't it? And it's just one of them things where he's just class and on repeat.
I think his apologies as well as I think he does it in the moment and then afterwards he realises that he's this role model for kids across Liverpool, and he just pictures like this little 7-year-old with like a cap on screaming at a Sunday league line, and he's like, oh no, I can't have that.
He reminds me of like when my missus apologises and like, doesn't really mean it. Yeah. And he's still blaming the fella, like, I am really sorry that you are such a crap ref that I had to shout at you. Like that. Like,
I'm so sorry that you've been so bad that you've made me be like this. Like,
won't do it again if you're not that bad again.
Yeah, absolutely.
I will not run on the pitch again if your goalie doesn't throw one off the crossbar in the night. If he does it again, I am not making any promises. Like, it's like that.
100%. I'm pleased that we managed to get a bit out of that. I wasn't really sure how we were going to analyse that game because it was just there.
Can I talk about Fabinho?
Actually, you know what? Let's talk about Fabinho. Are you going to... I thought he was better.
Take the mic.
Yeah, I didn't like it at all. I'm still not there with him. There's too much going down the middle of our pitch and it's too easy to get past him. And he's never been like that. You can just... It just looks like he's... I don't know. Maybe the team... Because you remember, Paul, as well, is that early in the season he was playing and we were letting a lot of goals in. Mm. The clean sheets came when Henderson pretty much went back there. You know, for a while it was... Obviously, a lot of that was down to the goalie as well, coming back into it, you need to admit that.
Yeah, and also, you know, we went through a run of fixtures of very winnable
games.
Yeah,
so there's a lot of factors into it, but I just thought that there was a lot going down there, what you wouldn't expect. And it might not just be him, there's a combination. There are three players in there, but it felt at times like he was almost, not so much a passenger, but when there's that much going down there, you'd expect more involvement from him. He's almost like on the periphery of the game, and for your centre mid to be on the periphery of the game is a bit weird.
I had a chat with my dad about this and I thought he was fine. By that, what I mean is he didn't noticeably stand out to me as being rubbish, which he has done a lot actually in recent weeks.
But the point
my dad was making was I'm not sure he was tested. You know, Bournemouth didn't really have the players there. You know, they've got two up top who were very much on our centre halves. They don't have that the whole player in the same way or whatever, but yeah, he was any normal situation. I don't think he plays that game.
No.
I think he'd have played two or maybe even three less games or at least starts if Henderson was fit. But we've kind of been left with no choice but to.
If Henderson's fit Wednesday, I don't think he plays. I don't think he can play after.
I think again though, you've got to look at, like you said, the people that are in front of him. I mean, we've got Ox, and was it Wijnaldum? Was that I think when we've had Fabinho in there with Hendo in front of him, Hendo's willing to make a run straight back and cover him, or wipe out a player before he gets to, all that sort of stuff. Whereas you look at, Wijnaldum also works in tandem like that. Yeah. But I just think Ox doesn't, I don't think of that when I think of him. I think of more, you know, up top kind of energy and long shots.
I think it's
like
a lot
that.
Of it... the standards he'd set before, didn't you? Where I think he was a lot of people's consensus, you know, one of the best defensive midfielders, you know, in Europe. I don't know if not in the league and stuff. And he has fell away. And like I say, he might just be that he's one of these lads who it takes a while to get back to fitness. Joe Gomez was the same. I thought he was crap at times when he come back from that injury.
Yeah.
You know, I remember Salzburg turning him inside out and stuff. And then he got into a rhythm. So it might just be that he needs games and he's going to have them for a while. So I just thought, you know, is it billing and sentiment for them? You know, at times he was running. He had the freedom of outfield, and that's where I would expect a fully fit Fabinho to just go and crunch him. You're not coming here, mate, and doing this on our pitch. Like I'll smash you.
And
even just take the ball off him. And it kind of never felt like he was there. And I think if I was playing Liverpool now, I would almost be going down the middle.
I think
two teams have shown now there's something there that you can get at.
The modern day CDM, the six. Is massive. It's so important. You see teams when they improve that spine, when they get that six, it's pivotal in today's game. And I think that at the minute, that's why it's been so easy to see that he's a bit off form, because obviously, as you said, nobody's ever been able to get through the middle of us, and now all of a sudden they are. And I think it's one of them where we need him to come back into this form on Wednesday. If he's playing Wednesday, it's the perfect time for him to go, you know what, I'm going to step it up here.
I think as well, like you said, and to kind of like bring it full circle and bring it to the sources, teams, Bournemouth have done it, Norwich did it, Watford has done it.
West Ham.
They've now become and realised that we're never going to play Liverpool off the park. That's never going to happen. When you've got them gaps and that bit of doubt, being niggly, getting in, leaving a foot in, with the refs occasionally like not going to give things, that is a chance for us to get in there. And it's worked and it's happened because we didn't have, like we said, we didn't have them captains on the pitch or the talkers to be like, listen, if you're going to do
Campbell
it, we're going to do it.
Just gone and done his best Soydini there, hasn't he, you know what I mean, in that game. Because why not?
And teams are now seeing it and thinking that works.
Well, I've been saying that
Diego Costa the death out
of
the
Diego Costa will not be scared by an Anfield atmosphere. He will see that as like the greatest villain show ever. Yeah, oh, you just want to boo me at full.
But I was saying this about these runner teams that we've had. Then on paper, you're like, oh, relegation fodder, brilliant, exactly what you want. But this is the last point of the season where these lads are going to have any fight left in them. Yeah. And they've played us, and, you know, obviously we've dipped as a result of it because they've got nothing to lose and we've got everything to lose. We're not necessarily the league title, but I've been saying this, and I'll talk about this in the build-up show for Atletico, but I've been saying this for a week or so now. That Atletico game is so big. That is the one that no one of our team wants to not be involved in that game, and you don't want to be the lad who goes in it. Are you gonna just leave a little bit in the tank because you want to make sure that you know you're not getting injured or you're not doing whatever? And I think you're right. That's what they've looked at. You play Bournemouth, you play Norwich, you play West Ham, you play Watford. If you play them, unless it's down to like a final game of the season, last roll of the dice. Most of those teams, it's generally settled with 4 or 5 games to go or whatever. They're a different kettle of fish. They've run out of energy. The legs have gone because it's been an arduous season. So even if they want to put that level of fight in, they actually physically can't do it as well. And they might just be done and they might be on the beach. They might be playing for moves and all that kind of stuff, or just looking to not be injured, or playing to don't want to get injured for the Euros or et cetera, et cetera. So this has been a trickier spell.
Up for grabs as well for them, which is what we've been.
Far trickier spell than I think people probably give it credit for. I want to talk about City United. Everyone watch the game?
Yeah.
Watch some of it. I have never enjoyed a Manchester United victory quite like I enjoyed that particular Manchester United victory.
Couldn't bring myself for that, I'll be honest. I couldn't.
Really?
I get it. I just.
It's great, but still, like, yes.
Yeah.
I'm not getting fucking glory. Tattooed on my face.
20, damn.
That Hasenhüttl gif where he celebrates, then he's like, I felt like that when he scored every time.
Or Gattuso. Sometimes maybe good, sometimes maybe shit.
I thoroughly enjoyed that because it was win-win, because ultimately if Man United gets smashed, it's expected, and it's quite funny. United, so it's just funny. And if Man United win, then it puts Liverpool a step closer to the title, and that's what it did. We've gone from needing 9 points to needing 6. But the idea that we now don't, if we can win our next two games, that we don't need we don't need to go to the Etihad. We never needed to go to the Etihad to win because we could have just won. We got Villa the game after, and you just beat Villa at Anfield and it's done. But the fact that it doesn't have to be under the lights.
And you can be the winners.
Maybe we could win the league. We might not kick a ball. Yeah. Win the league before we kick a ball again. I think what it did show, it showed that we are miles better than City this season. And City are good, and they are still very, very good.
But City can still finish the season on 87 points if they win in their remaining games. Like 87 points should we win in the league.
But they look like
much every season.
They've got no legs. They are knackered. They look absolutely shattered. And the goalie threw two in.
We've
lived that life, haven't we? We've been there before. Like, they were shockers from a fellow you just would not expect it from. I think Edison's brilliant.
Yeah.
Like, I think I've never thought it was that much different. I thought Alisson was better, but I've always thought it was nip and tuck. But he's just had one of those days where, you know, it's a Jersey Dudek Diego Forlan day where for whatever reason you've just had an absolute stink show. And that was the difference, because United aren't great, are they? They got two goals off their goalie throwing them in. But
to be fair, Bruno Fernandes, Martial, is genius.
Yeah. I think with both sides, that's been a really unique Manchester derby, because neither are at their peak and neither are at their absolute worst. You've got City sort of in a weird rebuild type season because it's the off way. I think Pep was saying through, and the and I think Bernardo Silva said it, like, it is weird because you're so far from fourth that it's, you're not, Champions League is almost guaranteed. You're never going to be winners. So it's like almost, it's
the, how to keep yourself going.
Yeah, and I think
when
as
you've
well,
got a big game coming up and you've got Champions League games.
Yeah, and then I think with United, they've been in such a kind of low type spell and now they're picking momentum up. You've
they're
got Bruno
like,
Fernandes.
Chelsea are a bit like this as well. They're a bit like what we were in the early days of Klopp, where big games are great because you've got yeah. lots of big game players still in your mm-hmm. squad
yeah.
who will bang up for it. You still generate, you can generate the atmosphere. Your fans are up for it. These games matter, and you can be a bit of the underdog as well. Like Man United just played on the counter.
That's...
you know, they're at home against Manchester. This is Manchester United who sat back and soaked the pressure. And we're looking to hit James,
five
on,
at the
you
back.
Know, smacking it,
but
smacking
that,
it into the
they're,
corner.
They're the games that can change that team season, that can give them that final push for the end of the season. And you saw it with Ollie and the celebrations he had. And I think Gary Neville said afterwards of like, you compare that to his post match a month ago, it's a completely different man.
What would you prefer, going to Everton having as champions because City have lost two? Or going to Everton to having to win?
I've said this for ages, and plenty of people can disagree with me, and it's absolutely fine. I think Everton are going to be started. Everton from next season onwards are going to start to be on their way back to being a good side again.
Mm-hmm.
And I think this is our last opportunity to redefine what the most Everton thing is. And I think we did it by putting a second string team out in the league, and we thought that was it. We thought Origi doing it last season. Then we thought this at Anfield. Then the FA Cup win and completely ripped up the rule book and started the game and did it with crayons because we were all children playing the game. And to win the title after 30 years at Goodison Park, I genuinely, and I know there's the whole, we'd rather have 54,000, you know, people in there watching it and blah blah blah. I look, I'm probably not even going to be able to get a ticket for that game, but
just get it won.
Just
the collective.
Mate, I'm worried that the games are going to get cancelled. Get it won now. Yeah. Get these games. Get the title won because I'm not having no fella in a court saying, "Oh, the season's ended." No, we've won it. It's ours. I don't care.
The best thing about it would be after last season where they sang that song about losing the league at Goodison Park, and then this year we go and win it there. Would be that. That's it for me. That sells it for me. It's the same thing as yesterday. It meant more for me, City losing, because I want Raheem Sterling to be stood there giving us a guard of honour.
Yeah, yeah,
that's
yeah.
what I want. Joe Gomez to walk down, give him eye contact,
just pick him up,
give him the big ones.
do an elbow bump.
As he's clapping us. I just think that would be class.
I think as well, at Goodison, the kind of as great as, you know, 50,000 cheers at Anfield would be, to have the Liverpool fans cheers, which will be more than anything, to have the rest just collective kind of, oh, just
sitting there, yeah. And look, there's a possibility as well, if they want to play games behind closed doors, that's as close as you're going to get, with Goodison just be empty. You know, none of them will turn up. There's talk of them all, like, say, like they're turning the backs or doing really fucking weird things.
Oh,
we've
put on banners up of really, like, controversial things so it can't be on telly.
Yeah, like Harold Shipman banners up and stuff like that. Oh, you fucking weird.
I was even more buzzing because I found out yesterday, I'm going to Thailand, and I found out that it's during the City game that I'm flying to Thailand. So if we were to win it when I'm on a fucking plane, I'd have been fuming. So the fact that
you'll be getting on that plane, pardon, don't worry about it. You'll be stuck in your house, don't worry about
it.
With all of us.
It's not a bad place to be trapped to celebrate if it happens. Like, but no, for me, I'd love to see us just win it.
That'd be, to be fair, that you're banking on Arsenal or Burnley getting someone off City.
That's the mad one. I mean, it's two home games, isn't it, for City back-to-back now. And I mean, there's definitely something to the Arteta, you know, knowing all the ways and all that, and has he got them good enough to be able to do something?
But they've got goals in them.
He needs it. Like, Arteta, I don't know if they're like the 10th or what they were, I don't know. But, like, Arsenal being that is not, like, they talk about big clubs and Man United and things like that. Arsenal being that low is awful.
They can't get Europe any other way. Like, so they got to do well in the league.
And City, again, I keep saying, the centre half is a mess. It's an absolute mess. Otamendi, I mean, for the stick Lovren gets, and I know Otamendi's got the medals in the bag, and he's
they're cut from the same cloth.
They are.
Like, you look at it, Lovren's like little honest shit, not too bad, like running up in the World Cup or that.
Yeah, no,
you looked on paper, you've never seen them play, you'd think, oh yeah.
They're both all right, but they are coming from the same club.
He's probably got like Leo Messi in a WhatsApp group, hasn't he? You know what I mean? Like, all these boss players, but
There was an article on it, I think it was The Athletic, who said he literally liked De Michaelis from a few years ago.
Yeah.
Where at that sort of club, you can't have that. He'll be got rid of in the summer and replaced.
I was going to say, Pep's going to spend a fortune in the summer if he's allowed to.
Oh, like, my God, yeah. It's going to be insane, isn't it? Transfer market.
So, yeah,
I think we've wrapped that up there. 25 points clear. I was looking at it. I do it every now and again to make me laugh. I get the league table up on my phone. It doesn't fit all 20 on the app I use. So if you want to see the top team, you've got to scroll all the bottom team. So I scroll such that Liverpool aren't on it, and I look at the league table. I'm like, if that was, that's just like a normal league table. City, I've got a good lead, you know, at the top. And there's some decent teams around there, but it's still competitive. And one little twist of turn might open things up, and then it just slides. There's 25 points.
I'm surprised they're not, like, because the gap's getting that there's no sort of petition for, like, what if we do, like, just ignore them, they get their own little trophy. What if we do, like, a runners-up trophy?
I guarantee there'll be some parody City account that suggests that at some point, like, because Liverpool, because of VAR. Like, we finished it really, we won the real trophy because of VAR. Yeah, absolute losers.
The best thing is 25 points clear. Roy Hodgson got 25 points for Liverpool. In this whole time at Liverpool, he accumulated 25 points.
I think it was Andrew Beasley put the tweet out saying, like, Liverpool don't turn up until Old Trafford. We don't play, we don't kick a ball. We decide not to play a game until Old Trafford and we draw. And then we carry on from there and we're still top of the league. That's basically
been good, haven't we?
Bloody good. Bloody good. Right, the Around the League show is coming up on the redmentv.com, where they're going to be talking a bit about the Manchester derby, I'm sure, and a lot about what's going to happen when coronavirus basically shuts everything down.
I'm
let's hope it all gets done.
The stick I've had in this place today.
Yeah, I know.
He's going to antibacterial hand gel after this. You're the reason they're sold out of your
mate. 100%. I am hand gelling my hands in a minute.
You do what you
he's
do.
Why don't
you just
cover
yourself in PVA glue? Do you reckon that'll work?
That sticks, virus.
You can peel it off and put a new layer. Like covering yourself in a whole layer, protective layer.
Just wash your hands and stop touching your face all the time. Like I've touched my face 3 times today, and every time I've done it, I thought, oh no, I've just touched my face there.
PSA, look straight down the line.
This is, you got a hard cut moment to me, just lying in a hospital bed. This is like,
honestly, mate, I've touched my face 3 times there, and I'm already, I'm desperate to go for this angel. You need to wrap up. Let's go. Anyway,
thanks very much for watching and for listening to that. And make sure you do head over to The Athletic and sign up. All the information will be in the description underneath, including the link and the code and all that kind of stuff. But yeah, guys, thank you very much. It's been an absolute pleasure.
Elbow warmth.
The Athletic build-up will be on there. We'll be on the YouTube channel, so make sure you check that out and we'll see you there. Ta-da.
Welcome to Sincerely Sloan, presented by Uninterrupted. I'm your host, professional tennis player, wife, parent, and entrepreneur, Sloane Stephens. As an athlete and as a person, my journey has had a lot of twists and turns, from moments of adversity and doubt to unimaginable triumph and satisfaction. Throughout the season, I'm joined by some of the biggest names in sports, entertainment, culture, and a few members of my tribe. Our conversations keep it real and push it past skin deep. We reveal the perspectives, routines, and products that allow each of us to show up at our best. Join me on my journey of self-discovery and many, many laughs along the way. Sincerely, Sloane.
Ever Googled your own name? Prepare for a shock because your personal info, including addresses and phone numbers, is out there, especially with the recent hacks at some big phone and healthcare companies. But here's where Aura steps in. Aura scans the dark web for your sensitive information and sends real-time alerts. Aura also actively requests that your information be removed from data broker sites, putting you back in control. Aura provides you with a complete online safety toolkit, credit and transaction monitoring, a secure password manager, a privacy-enhancing VPN, and more. Try Aura risk-free with a 14-day trial at aura.com/safety. That's aura.com/safety. Rest easy with Aura. Visit aura.com/safety today.